Good evening. I'm not sure if I'm going to help you solve a quandary tonight or not. One of the quandaries that this preacher is trying to solve right now is what to do with the last half of my message, because we already had a panel discussion and discussed some of what I was going to talk about. So I thought maybe I could just talk about the fundamentals and then let you out early. Or I guess I could give you a 40-year-old's perspective on some of the questions that we discussed. So we're going to jump into this thing, and I don't want to keep you a long time tonight and see what happens. If we repeat, I guess repeat and repeat is good for us as well. The quandary of communication. As we think about communication, if you notice that we have been talking about issues or subjects that are very basic to life. The first night we talked about tools, this morning we talked about relationships, and now tonight we're talking about communication. And tonight's message is really just a continuation of what we talked about this morning with relationships. We're going to continue talking about relationships, but I want to think about communication and how communication relates to relationships and how important it is to have good communication that will build relationships and the different kinds of communication that you are required to make choices on in your life. You have no choice but to decide whether you're going to communicate and how you're going to communicate. So as we think about concepts of communication, communication is a process of interaction with people and environment. It's two or more individuals who interact and influence the ideas, beliefs, and our attitudes that we have about each other or about things in life. We heard today from Dan that the internet is not a person, it's a thing. And so as we think about that thing and we relate to that and we relate to one another like we did today in the panel discussion, or as we heard, there was communication there. As we batted around ideas and concepts, that was communication. And I would like for you to think about how that panel discussion would have been different if we would have taken the panel and put them back in the storage room to answer their questions. And we could have heard them over the PA system, and we could have answered through the PA system, but we could not have observed them. How much less communication there would have been. If all you could have heard is their snickers and their answers, and you could not have seen their faces, you would be amazed at the amount of communication that you would have lost today if you couldn't have seen those people on the panel. So communication is a two-way process. And as we think about communication, there needs to be a message if you're going to communicate. If there's no message, there's no communication. How do you communicate without a message? Either you decide not to communicate and you send a message, or you communicate and there's a message. But if there's going to be true communication, you need to have somebody that's willing to send that message. Somebody that motivates that message. And this message originates with the sender, and then this message goes out with a method. You have to decide before you send a message and communicate in your mind that you have a message, okay? And so then I have to quickly decide, how am I going to transmit this message? And it takes a method. You're going to have a method. If you don't have a method, you won't send the message. And then at the other end of this method, there has to be someone to receive that message. And they're going to have to connect with the message and get the message, and then they respond to that message by a method, and then you have communication. That's the basic concept of communication. And we saw today that there's verbal communication and nonverbal communication. There's different purposes for communication. You know, communication is a little bit like eating utensils. Sometimes we eat with plasticware, and sometimes we eat with china. If you're going to go on a picnic or have a barbecue, you're probably not going to go to the china cupboard and get your china out and use it for a picnic. On the other hand, if you're going to have people over for Sunday lunch and you want to have some kind of nice banquet, you're probably not going to use paper plates and paperware. You're going to fit the utensils to the event. And that's exactly how it is when we communicate. We choose a level of communication to match the need in the environment. I heard a story recently about a man and a wife who got up in the morning, and it was a winter morning, and they had a big snowstorm, and they each made a plan for the day, but they did not communicate. And so the man, he decided that he's going to go out and shovel the snow off the roof because there was a lot of snow on the roof and he wanted to get the snow off. And the wife decided that she was going to take the pickup truck that day and go into town and get something. So the man, after breakfast, he goes out and he gets ready to get up on the roof. And he sees how steep that roof is and he decides, you know, I really better take some precaution here. So he ties a rope around himself and loops it across the ridge of his house to the back driveway and ties it onto the bumper of his truck. And as he was shoveling the snow, as you can imagine, all of a sudden he takes a fast exit to the ridge of his roof and disappears across the top of his roof. As his wife was bumping out the driveway and he was being dragged behind, all of a sudden he decided it's time to communicate. Do you think that he said, excuse me, dear, would you just pull off the lane here so I could unhook? Do you think that's how he communicated? I don't think so. I wasn't there, but I can easily imagine the level of communication he chose to use to send that message. Well, how would you like if I was walking down this aisle after church and it was somewhat cluttered with people and I wanted to get around you and I would decide to communicate to you like he probably communicated to his wife in that event? Excuse me, get out of the way. No, I wouldn't do that. You know, we choose a level of communication to match the event and the environment. And that's what we want to talk about tonight as we think about media and the choices that we have to make when we communicate. We make a choice, first of all, whether we're going to send a message or not send a message. And then we're going to choose the content of that message. And then when we choose that content, then we have to decide, now how am I going to communicate? What method will I use to communicate? For example, if I want to tell my wife that I'm going to be late and I'm in a hurry, I probably won't call her on the phone and take her time and my time. I'll probably pull out my phone and send her a text message. All I'm doing is coordinating. All I'm doing is transmitting a message to her to tell her, to inform her that I'm going to be late. But sometimes we use communication to use as a bridge, to bridge a gap between two people, to build relationships, like we talked about this morning. There's a conversation that needs to take place between two people, and it may be somewhat intense, and the message is important. And we're not going to just send brief little text messages, or we shouldn't, to convey a deep message like that. We need to choose some method of communication that is going to accomplish what we want to accomplish. You know, so we evaluate the message, and then we transmit it with the right method. Sometimes, you know, there may be a particular piece of information that we need to discuss. Maybe there's a relationship problem. Maybe there's an event that took place between you and I that has caused strain in our relationship. You know, we need to discuss that element of information. And it wouldn't be a good idea to solve a relationship problem like that with text, with short little one-sentence messages. We've chosen the wrong method for the message. So depending on the type of communication it is, makes a difference on the method that we should use. And that's what I want to think about tonight. We talked about it a little bit in our panel discussion. I heard today some ideas about, you know, what is important, what kind of messages should be important and what shouldn't when you're in a crowd. But as we think about that, we have so many options on methods today. We have more methods to communicate than probably anybody in history has ever had. In our generation, we have so many different methods by which we can communicate that it almost makes us more vulnerable because we're almost bound to choose the wrong one a lot of times. You know, our communication can almost be in real time even when we're not with a person. You can have a person on the East Coast and the West Coast and they can transmit messages so quickly that it's almost real time. I mean, it's almost like a conversation. We call it a chat. So when it comes to sending someone a message, we have to decide between all the options that we have to choose from in 2017. Shall I use my default text app that comes on my phone? Or shall I send it with Snapchat or WhatsApp? Maybe I should send it to a friend on GroupMe so that other people can see it too. Or post it on Facebook. Or maybe I should forward it to my family text group or my good friend's email chat time. You know, why the quandary? when we have so many different methods in which to communicate. We have all these methods to communicate. We should have communication down to a science, right? We should have the absolute circle on this thing of communication because we have so many methods. But you know, it's not that way. We know that in spite of all these methods, on options to communicate, relationships seem to be just as complicated today as they were for our grandparents. Three principles of interpersonal communication. Number one, communication is inescapable. You have to communicate. We cannot not communicate. The very attempt to not communicate, you communicate. You know, if I decide I'm not going to say anything tonight, I'm going to go to these youth gatherings, and I'm just going to shut up, and I'm not going to communicate. So you sit there with a very stoic look on your face all night long and watch the surroundings, and at the end of the youth gathering, did you communicate? Yes, you communicated. You told the rest of the crowd that I don't want to communicate. And you told them that something is wrong, and I've made a choice that I'm going to communicate this message by silence. So we cannot choose not to communicate. Communication is irreversible. I thought about bringing a tube of toothpaste along to prove this concept. You know, communication is irreversible. If I would take a tube of toothpaste and I would squirt out the toothpaste on the pulpit here and then ask you to come up here and put it back in the tube, it's virtually impossible to get that back in like it was. And that's exactly how communication is. Now, once you've communicated, you really can't take it back. You can communicate some more to fix the problem, or you can try to change the intent of your communication with more communication, but you can't take back, you can't rewind communication. Number three, communication is complicated. You know, we may not always look at it that way because we're so used to communicating that we live with the risk all the time. There's a risk with communicating, and it's a risk that none of us can avoid. But when we really evaluate it, it really is complicated. We've already talked about some why that is. And today we talked about body language. We talked about the concept of communicating through our senses and communicating with words and the lack of words. There's so many different ways that we can be misunderstood. You know, I can talk to you and I can be the person that I think I'm being. Or I can think that maybe I'm the person that you think I am, and then I'm really the person that's communicating like I really am, like you understand me to, that you really understand me to be. There's so many ways that communication gets complicated. When we communicate, is that person really getting the intent of what we are trying to communicate? That's the crucial part of communication. When I send a message through a method to a receiver, somebody who receives that message, I have successfully communicated when they understand the intent of my communication. I think sometimes it does us well to clarify what we have heard. When we are on the receiving end of communication, if it's really important communication, then I should say, now, when you're done communicating with me, I say, now, is this what you meant? And then repeat it back and say, is this what you meant? Was this the intent? Because, you know, we're using a language, and the language that we use is only symbols of our ideas in our head. And so I use words, and I mean these words in a certain way, and you might take them in another way. And so the words are transmitting ideas that I have that I want to take from my mind to your mind. And so that word can be taken in a lot of different ways. So it doesn't necessarily mean that these symbols that I am transmitting will get the intent of my ideas and my message over to you. But when I have done that successfully through symbols or body language or whatever method I might use, when you have successfully understood the intent of my message, then we have successfully communicated. Let's turn to Genesis chapter 11. Here is the story of the Tower of Babel. Let's read from verse 1 through verse 9. We're all familiar with this account. I want to think about little bit of this story in relationship to communication. And the whole earth was of one language and one speech. And it came to pass as they journeyed from the east that they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. And they said one to another, Go to, let us make brick and burn them thoroughly. And they had brick for stone, as fine had they for mortar. And they said, Go to, let us build us a city and a tower whose top may reach unto heaven. And let us make us a name, lest we be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth. And the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the children of men builded. And the Lord said, Behold, the people is one. They have all one language, and this they begin to do. And now nothing will be restrained from them which they have imagined to do. Go to, let us go down and there confound their language, that they may not understand one another's speech. So the Lord scattered them abroad from thence upon the face of all the earth, and they left off to build the city. Therefore is the name of it called Babel, because the Lord did there confound the language of all the earth, and from thence did the Lord scatter them abroad upon the face of all the earth. Here we see a people who had a couple things in common. They had a common cause, and they had a common language. And through those two aspects of this community, they were attempting something, and God said they're going to do it because they had a common cause and a common language. He said, let us make a name, lest we be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth. The problem was that in spite of the common language and the common communication and the common cause, the cause was not right. And so they had good communication and they had a cause, but the cause was wrong. And God looked down and He wasn't pleased. And He said, I will break up this community and I'm going to scatter them. I'm going to deface this plan. And all He had to do was change the languages where they couldn't communicate. And then they couldn't be effective anymore. The common language. They could no longer stay connected because there was not a common language to communicate. You know, relationships are built when we have a common cause. And when we can communicate with a common language. If I have nothing in common with a person and I can't talk their language, it's going to be pretty hard for me to build a relationship with them. Almost impossible. We can sit there and make hand symbols all day long and I can guess at what they're saying and he can guess at what I'm saying, but we're not going to build a good solid relationship without a common cause and a common language. Communication is so important in building real-time relationships in our life. We develop a common language, not only with verbal communication, but also with history, with shared history. You know, you think about the people that you went to school with, and maybe some of you are still living around the people that you went to school with. I haven't. But you know, when I get to be with one of my old friends from grade school, even though we haven't been together for 10 years, there's a shared history there that links us together, and there's a friendship there just because we have shared history, just because we have something in common from our past. And that's a very important aspect to solid relationships, is that we have something that we have shared. We have that frame of reference. We have that common cause. Even though maybe today we're not sharing life in close proximity, we have something in common that we can go back to. And in our church, it's that way. We have a common cause. We have this relationship of common cause and the same language. And so therefore, it's a platform that we can build good, solid relationships with. We have a shared vision. We have history. We have commitment. We're here. We're committed to this relationship. And as we move forward, we have that confidence in each other that we are going in the same direction. That's what makes brotherhood work. That commitment to the future with a shared cause and a common cause, it builds relationship. You know, these kinds of relationships cannot be built without communication. And media technology has widened the field of communication and correspondence with many people outside of our brotherhood. Many people outside of your church friends and in your church, with media, you can reach out, and really the limits are endless. anywhere on the globe. The ability to communicate with so many people in so many different ways can actually become a distraction to our relationships. We talked about that a little bit this morning in building real relationships or staying connected. Real-time relationships. You know, our friends that are around us, those who have shared life with us, those who really care about us, those are the ones that we need to put in priority. As we build that bulwark of relationship that's going to protect our Christian lives and the environment of a Christian atmosphere around you, is going to take an investment of time, and it's going to be need to be a priority to you to communicate on a level with your friends that are here in close proximity so that you can have those real relationships that God wants you to have. Whether it's church family or our biological family, it's going to take communication. You know, we talk about staying connected and being connected and staying in touch. And I believe that it is necessary to communicate information to stay connected. But I think media communication is not a good place to build these relationships. We had that question today in the panel. And I think it is right that when we have a good relationship and we understand each other, that we have shared the past, we have a common cause, there is an element of media communication that can take place where we can understand each other. It's good for passing on information, but it's a very poor method, really, in general, to build relationships. I think that our media culture is trying to expand at a fast rate of speed the ability to communicate emotion, to communicate on a relational level. Think about it. It's been about 13 years since I started to send text messages. And I think that probably that was about the beginning, about 2003, 2004, is when text message, the ability to text on the phone was developed. Maybe some of the older ones can prove me wrong, but that's what I remember. It's about 2003, somewhere in there, was when this started. At least that it came to the rural area where I was. And at that time, you did well to be able to spell words right and send a message that was very simple. But as time has went on, now we can send not only words, but we can send smiley faces, we can send upside-down smiley faces, we can send monkeys with their hands over their eyes, we can send all kinds of you name it. And the reason that is all there is because we're trying to develop this thing so you can send more emotion with your text and not just symbols. They want you to be able to convey more emotion and more feeling with this message, so that you will depend more and more on this to build relationships. They want you to be there. That's where they want you. The developers want you to use these methods. And so they're trying to think of more ways. How can we put more into this so that people can convey their thought patterns in a more effective way? You know, but there's nothing that will take the place of face-to-face communication. There's nothing that will replace voice inflection. Think about this. What if your best friend had a close family member that would pass away. And you had the choice whether you were going to travel a distance and go to the viewing and the funeral. Or you could stay home and send them some kind of message on your phone or call them. But you made a choice to get in your car and drive to the location where your friend was and attend this funeral. And you would walk into the back of the church at the viewing, and your friend would be standing up there and grieving over the loss of a loved one. And you would walk up to that your friend and not say a word and put your arm around your friend there at the viewing of their loved one. How would you send that message by instant messaging or by media? The message that you would convey to your friend By going to that funeral and going up there and being there face to face, you never said a word. All you did is went there, you put your arm around them, and you conveyed a message. You know, we've already decided that we can't have a church without relationships. We all value our relationships. We wouldn't know what to do without our Christian friends, without this network of close friendship and family. But really, When it comes down to it, our actions on an everyday basis shows us and others where our priorities really are and what these relationships mean to us. All of us only have so much time in a day to communicate. And the choices we make, and the methods we use, and the messages we send, the content of those messages, are making a statement about what I think about my relationships. Good communication takes a lot of effort. You know, if you were going to go and see your friend at this funeral instead of trying to send some kind of message, you know, when something's really great, we can send a thumbs up, you know. But how are you going to convey a message like that? Like a person at a funeral, or like we talked about, how are you going to do that? And you're going to need to do that kind of communicating if you want to maintain your close relationships. If you're willing to give up those kind of messages and those kind of methods of real-time relationships and trade them out for media messaging, you are going to lose a very integral part of the relationship that God wants you to have with your friends and your church people. If we spend all of our time on media communication, then we're filling this relational need with false concepts and with false messages, and we are cheating ourselves out of what God has for us in real time. When you have a face-to-face conversation with someone and your text alert goes off on your phone, the choice you make about that alert is going to tell that person and yourself what you really think about your relationships. Will you turn your attention to your phone while the other person talks to your forehead? Or are you going to try to pull it out and say, yeah, and act like you can bounce both pieces of communication when the other person knows you really aren't with them? You are sending a message to that person that what I have in my pocket is more important than the relationship that I am communicating with you in real time. You know, we're trading solid food for Twinkies when we choose to pay attention to media messages instead of this face-to-face relationship. Now, there is those exceptions. We talked about emergencies and this and that. But you know what I've found interesting about media communication? We always talk about what if there's an emergency. But you know, the few times that I've had an emergency, that's when I can't get a hold of somebody on modern technology. So often, when you actually need this thing to fill a good purpose, you can't get a hold of the people. Now, it's not every time, but I've noticed a lot of times when it really matters and when it really is important to break off what I'm doing in real time, then it doesn't even work. You know, Twinkies aren't necessarily bad, but they sure shouldn't replace a balanced diet. And it's the same way we talked about this morning. Staying connected with people and transmitting and coordinating with messages and methods isn't all bad. But when we allow ourselves to succumb to a level, a common denominator, where we're trying to live real time with media messaging, we have reduced the level of expectation for good relationships to a substandard level, and we're going to lose if we allow that to happen in our life. You know, if you're visiting someone and you lay your phone up here on the table, I don't care if it's face down or face up. This is a 40-year-old's perspective, maybe. But I believe that we are communicating to the person that we are talking to that what I have right here is more important than what I'm talking to you about. Is there something sinful about texting? No, I don't think so. But we need to keep it in perspective. There needs to be a balance. Or maybe our phone rings in our pocket and we're having a good, solid conversation with somebody. So I pull it out and look at it a while and then I tell the person, well, I'm not going to answer this. Well, how heroic is that? You've already spent time meditating on this thing. Think about it. What is it worth? Is it always bad? No. We're not talking about 100% an exclusive concept, but I think the mentality we have to this kind of communication is going to come out more often in a day's time than what we realize. Are we willing to compromise relationships to stay connected? Social media, you know, we heard a little bit about social media and how much time it takes. I have here that people check their social media on an average of 17 times a day. You know, we're fighting a battle for right and good. Your purpose is different than people in society. Are you spending your time? Are you prioritizing your time in a different way in communication and media? Media relationships like messaging and social media, they're addicting. We heard about that today. And that's proven by science. When we get a response to a message, it feels good. So if we're feeling kind of bored, by the way, pop culture, Harry Argus says that we have the first and second commandment. In our society, in popular culture, there's two commandments. And the first commandment is, I shall not be bored. And the second commandment is like unto it, I shall not be boring. And I think that too often, we are that way. When we have 3 minutes of time when we could think about something significant, we pull out our phone and start a conversation. And when we get a response, whether it's a like on social media like they talked about today, or a response to a message, it triggers a chemical in our brain called dopamine. And dopamine is a chemical that your brain releases with kind of an exciting, addicting quality that happens in real time. And it's the same chemical that is released in your brain when you're on drugs, or when you're on pornography, or alcohol. All of those addictions release an overload of dopamine in your brain, and it's the same thing when you are addicted to social media, and even when we think we're not addicted. But that feel-good mentality comes from that chemical being released in your brain when you get this message and it feels good, or when I'm bored or I'm feeling blue and so I send this message out, and all of a sudden my text alert goes off, and right away that my heart starts pumping and I start, you know, what's on there? That's what's happening to the chemistry of your mind. You know, addictions destroy relationships. How many of us would put a cabinet in the corner of our kitchen and we would put some kind of addictive drug or maybe some alcohol in there, and we would tell our brothers and sisters, hey, if you get bored, go over and take a nip. We wouldn't do that. We wouldn't think about doing that. And yet so often, we are doing, in essence, somewhat the same thing when we live on this media and we have this overdose of messaging. It's doing somewhat the same thing. I think there already is rehabs for media. I know there is for gaming addiction and now media addiction. It's becoming an addiction. It's actually, I think, it's a medical condition now for media overdose and media addiction. Is there a place for media communication? I want to make it clear that there is, but it must be kept in perspective. Think about the Tower of Babel. You know, they were connected. They were communicating, but for the wrong cause. They didn't have the right cause. They were united in the wrong cause. Communication can easily be misused in our generation to build a connection that has the wrong cause. And the more you communicate in a mass way, and the more people you include in that out beyond the realms of your close proximity, the more chance of including people that are not like-minded with you, and the cause will become off-centered. The best control you have of relationship and relationship content is right here where you know the people. And if we allow content in our relationships through communication that is not like-minded or is not biblical, it erodes our purpose that we talked about this morning. Our relationship with God will be affected by the kind of relationships we build between people. Did you know that people who spend more time on Facebook suffer from depression more than someone who spends less time or no time? Remember, our minds are created to be influenced, and they will be influenced by somebody. After World War II, I think it was around 1961, there was an experiment that they put out and tried on people. It's called the Ash Experiment. And they took 8 people and they put them in a room and they lined them up. And they went to 7 of these people and they said, now we're going to have a board on the wall, and there's going to be three lines on there of different lengths. So you have three lines, and they were all different lengths. And then they went down through and they asked all eight of these people, which line on that board is the longest? But seven of these people, before they went in the room, they pulled them aside and they said, look, when you are asked this question, you say that this line is the longest, and it really wasn't. It was the shortest, or the shorter. It was shorter. It was not the longest line. They told seven people, you name that line as the longest one. But the eighth person on the end of the line, they didn't say anything to them. And so they would go down this row of people and they say, now which is the longest line? And the person would name the wrong line. And it was obvious which line was the longest. And this person on the end of the line was looking at this board, and here's the long line. It's obvious. It's a no-brainer. Which is the line that's the longest? But every one of his group was naming the short line. When it got to him, only 25% of the people named the right line. 75% of the people agreed with the first seven people who named it wrong on purpose. Because they were influenced by the people. Finally, by the time seven people, they were doubting their sanity. They said, well, it must be right. Because seven people have said this is the longest line. Only 25% stated the obvious. 75% named the wrong line because of influence. They doubted their own logic over the influence that was wrong of their peers. Now, I don't know what would happen if you and I would be in that group. Hopefully, we would be willing to stand out and say, well, dummies, it's this one. But probably, we might just fit into the 75%. You know, we live in a world that is influenced, and we are no exception to that. What are we being influenced by? The methods of communication that we use is sending a message. And if we're not getting the message across, we're having the wrong kind of communication. If we're using the wrong kind of communication for a purpose, it's going to affect our relationships. The responses we get is doing something to us, to influence us. We live in this world of instant gratification. When we send a message, we want a response. You know, whatever we want it quick. If I want to buy something, I go on my phone and slide right on Amazon and I have it in a day or two, right? That's the world we live in. We don't want to wait for anything. We want what we want, and we want it right now. And so I think that that's part of the pool. Solid relationships take time to build. Face-to-face communication takes effort, and it's so easy to slide right. The concept of media communication is so easy that I believe more and more with our instant mentality, instead of taking the time to communicate on a face-to-face level, we just quickly send a message. And we're not communicating the intent of our hearts. It's becoming a shallow communication rather than something of depth, because we want it quick and we want a response quick. And we don't have time to go visit the person, so we want to quick send a message. Maybe I owe somebody an apology and I really should go to their place and meet them face to face and say, I'm sorry that I did this. But instead, we pull out our phones and we whip them a quick message. Hey, sorry about that. I shouldn't have done that. It's the cheap way out. We're not taking the opportunity to really build relationships. Well, I believe that we are missing a lot of opportunities. In our fast-paced world that has so many ways to communicate quick, that we are missing opportunities to build relationships. When someone sends us a message, that same pressure is on to quickly send a message back. You know, it's hard to finish a conversation when we feel our phone vibrate, and we just can't hardly keep ourselves from pulling that phone out. Even though we've got thousands of text messages, that next one is always what is on there. Or maybe I don't have my phone and I'm just thinking about my phone out there in the car and what might be on it. That is the distraction that's taking you away from real-time relationships. Our communication quickly turns into short bursts of communication. Can you imagine trying to hold a conversation with the context as long as text messages? You would sound almost a little simple if you would try to communicate in real time like you communicate on text. Because it would be short little bursts that we send out. Or maybe some long piece of conversation when it really should have had a response in between there from whoever you're talking to. But we preach this long sermon because we want to get it all in one thought. But if we're instead, if we were real time, if we were here facing them, we could say some of it and they could respond. And then we could finish and be more accurate with the content of our message. Those are the benefits of real-time relationships. Real-time communication. You know, real relationships take time. And it militates against the pressures of our culture to do things quick. But good relationships are built through good communication. Things that really matter take time. Here's a story I have about Abraham Lincoln when he was president. When he was elected president, he left Springfield, Illinois, and all of his friends behind, and he traveled to the Capitol to be president. And Abraham Lincoln left a lot of good friends back in the town of Illinois, and that's where this story picks up. There was a man by the name of Billy Brown, one of Abraham Lincoln's good friends. And he decided one day, Billy did, that it's time to go see my friend Abe. And so he took a trip to the Capitol to see Abraham Lincoln. When he got to the Capitol, an aide to the president met Billy at the door, asking him if he had an appointment. Billy said, "No, I don't have an appointment. Just go tell Abe that Billy Brown is here to see him." The aide frowned his disapproval, but went to give Lincoln the message. In 2 minutes, the door burst open, and Lincoln was there shaking Billy's hand, so glad to see him. Lincoln welcomed him in and informed him he was staying for supper. As soon as Lincoln could discharge the duties at hand, the two of them went to the back of the house and sat on the stoop and talked and talked. Lincoln asked him all about Springfield, and Billy filled him in on all the weddings and the funerals and the new babies and the buildings around town. Later that evening, Billy said goodbye to Abe Lincoln, not giving in to Lincoln's request to stay overnight because he didn't want to invade on all his important activities. So as they parted, Lincoln asked Billy, "What did you come down here for?" Billy said, "I came down to see you, Mr. Lincoln." "But you haven't asked me for anything, Billy." "No, Mr. Lincoln, just wanted to see you. I felt kind of lonely. Been so long since I've seen you, and I was afraid I'd forget some of them yarns that I wanted to tell you if I didn't unload them soon." Tears came into Lincoln's eyes and ran down his cheeks. "I'm homesick, Billy, and it seems as if this war would never be over. You'll never know just what what good you have done for me." You know, I wonder what Billy Brown would have done in 2017 to communicate to Abe Lincoln, if Abe Lincoln would have been there. Would have he taken the time to get in his car? And at that time, he probably didn't have a car. There was no car. He either went horseback all the way from Springfield, Illinois, to the Capitol because he wanted to talk to his friend. You know, there's some messages that we just can't type. There's some things that we need to convey in relationships that we can't send and be effective. We need to be there with the person. The effort of a friend to invest in relationships is priceless to us. If a friend of ours is willing to invest time, willing to invest effort to communicate in a real way, just like we were talking about in that funeral scenario, if somebody does that for us, the message they convey to us and the relationship they build with us is priceless. And we need that kind of messages being sent in real time. You need it. I need it. And you know, there's no good app to build good relationships. Communication is a large part of the pathway of Christian relationships. Jesus said that they may be one in us. That's what Jesus wants for you and I today. Whatever church group we are part of, whatever circle of friends that we have, He wants you to be one in relationship with your Christian friends. Here's some practical things now that I want to talk about a little bit, just to give you some thoughts, and some of it crosses paths with what we talked about in our panel discussion. You know, I believe that we can talk and talk and talk about these things, but unless we make it practical in our life, unless we do something with it, it's not going to get anywhere, because the pressures of our culture are there. And so unless we're proactive in putting things in place in my life, then it's not going to happen. Number one, during mealtime, find a place for your phone other than your pocket. Remember we talked about the five senses this morning being relational tools for you to build relationships. And at mealtime, when you are sitting around eating a meal, it's a perfect time to build relationships. There's something about eating and relationships that go hand in hand. And there's something about good communication and eating that happens. And when you allow your phone to intercept that, you're doing a major disfavor to your friends or your family and yourself. So I challenge you, find a docking station for your phone for mealtime. And you know, these are things that I've had to learn at a much older age than you, and I'm still learning them. Sometimes my wife has to remind me, get rid of the phone. But you know, I try more as much, I make a conscious effort, if I can, before I go to the supper table, to get rid of my phone. Put it somewhere where I can't hear it, and I'm not going to be bothered by it. Because if I hear that thing vibrating on the desk, or chirping on the counter, it's still a distraction, even if I don't choose to get up and go pay attention to that thing. Number two, don't charge your phone beside your bed. And I differ with the panel probably a little bit on this, that I'm 41 years old. We talked about what age should you let your children take their phone to bed. I would like to ask you, what difference does it make what age you are? Now, I understand, I agree that 16-year-old and younger is no time to take your phone to bed with you. But I wonder, is it really healthy for those who are 16 to 80 to take their phone with them to bed? You know, unless you're working as an EMT and you might get called out on duty during the night, or you have a chicken house that has an alarm system that's hooked to your phone, or some kind of real need like that, then I don't see any reason why you should let a good night's sleep be interrupted by the presence of that media device in close proximity to you. Now you can say, well, I use it for my alarm clock. Well, go to Walmart. They sell alarm clocks for about $5 or $8. Buy an alarm clock. That's no good excuse. Skip two Starbucks coffees and go buy your alarm clock. And put your phone in the cupboard. That's not a good enough excuse. There was alarm clocks around a lot longer than smartphones. When you get up in the morning, try to communicate face-to-face with someone in your family before you check your phone. You know, unless we cultivate habits, it's not going to happen. And we might think, well, what difference does that make? It makes a big difference after a while, because practice will train our hearts. We can make rules, and we can follow these rules, and we can have knowledge. And when we have knowledge of something, it trains my mind. But when I put something to practice, and I have a rule, and I have a standard, that trains my heart. And I wasn't going to say this, but I'm going to go ahead now since I started. But think about this. Muslims who are willing to go and go on a terrorist mission, and they are willing to die for their faith, and a lot of them don't even know the Quran. They haven't even read their Bible, hardly. They only know snatches and portions of their Quran. Why is it that that Muslim person is willing to go on a terrorist mission and give his life for a religion that he doesn't even understand in knowledge? I believe it's because he has trained his heart. They have rituals. They have standards. And this has been cultivated in his life by this ritual that he does over and over and over again. And he has trained his heart with the concept that this is right. His mind is not informed, necessarily. It's informed to a point. But when we have habits and we have standards, those standards that are lived out repetitiously train our heart. That's why sometimes I believe that we see people who have the knowledge of the truth, but they fall away from God. And we wonder, how can they do this when they know what is in the Bible? But you know, I believe that they haven't been dedicated enough to the truth that they know. They haven't put it to practice in a real way, and their heart is not in it. Their heart has not been trained. When you're having a conversation with another person, and you both have a phone, why don't, instead of randomly taking your attention away from your friend and checking my phone, why don't you decide at the beginning of the conversation that we're not going to check our phone, and when we do, we'll do it together. We'll decide at some point in our conversation, well, let's check our phone, if that's what needs to be done. Instead of not communicating and just trying to sneak my phone out, or lay it in my lap and try to play two time and still talk to my friend and sneak a message off to my phone without them feeling neglected. Have you ever talked to somebody in real time when we're talking, we're having a conversation, and all of a sudden you're in the middle of a concept and this person starts looking back here somewhere and you can tell it. And they want to somehow trick you that they're still with you, but you can easily tell that they're not with you. They're watching somebody else back there, and pretty soon this little grin is on their face, and you feel like a fool. Why is it different when we're having a conversation, and I try to pull out my phone and have this distraction and think that you won't notice, and you won't feel somehow jiffed because here I am, shooting this message off in the middle of when you're trying to talk to me? Another thing I think is good to do is make sure that every day that we try to spend some time building relationships through face-to-face communication. And I'm not talking about, hey mom, where's my lunch? Okay, have a good day. See you tonight. And out the door. I'm talking about taking a significant amount of time away from something else and designating it to a conversation that is going to be meaningful flow of content between me and a loved one, or between me and my friend. Every day we should spend time doing that, making a conscious effort to block out a segment of time to have a real good conversation that builds relationship. Remember, the habits that we form will eventually be our reality. How many of you have wore Gore-Tex clothing? Most of the boys, at least. Well, you know, when it comes to building lots of relationships, did you know that it's virtually impossible? The man who owned Gore-Tex clothing, he started out as a small business. And when he started out, he knew all of his employees. But there came a time that one day he walked out on the manufacturing floor and he met an employee and he didn't know them. And it bothered him. So he came back in his office and he sat down and he started to reflect. Now, when did I go from a small business to a business that was big enough? He had about 300 employees, when I didn't know all of my employees. And he kept thinking back until he got back to about 150. And he decided that right about the time he left the 150 mark was when he lost touch with employees. He didn't know all of his employees. And he had a friend by the last name of Dunbar, and he told this to Dunbar, and this intrigued him, so he did a study on this and found out that that's about right. The average person can only build about 150 real, solid relationships in their life. So what about the other 500 that we're connected to with media? You know, God has given us family and friends, church family. Don't trade the potential for real-time relationships with something that's impossible. Does that mean that we shouldn't do anything out here? That's not what I'm saying. But let's make sure that we have our priorities in the right place when it comes time to communicate. I'm getting ready to go over time. I'm going to hurry up here. How we regulate media communication is going to tell us what we really think of our relationships. Which community is our communication building? The community of connection that our generation is so geared for, that our culture is so good at, or the community of Christian relationships. In Malachi 3, verse 16, it's talking about a people who feared God And it was documented. We're not going to go there. But it says, then they that feared the Lord spake often one to another. And then the next verse says, and there was a book of remembrance written about that. You know, real relationships, there's going to be that one anothering, that face-to-face time with each other. And those relationships are documented. And those relationships are making up the experience of who we are. So let's be careful to put priority on our communication and make sure that the content of our communication is accomplishing what it should. May the Lord bless.